from the crypt.
Hello, boys and ghouls. Welcome to episode 134 of Dads from the Crypt. My name is Jason. Today, joined by Jody.
Hello.
And we have a very special returning guest. She wears many hats, and we'll get to each one of them in a moment. But she goes by Spooky Sarah.
Hello.
Hello. How are you?
I am fantastic.
Good. All right. You've got a lot to talk about. So tell us, let's start with the basic part. Tell us about your show, your page.
Well, I have my podcast, Final Girls Feast, which I co-host with my co-host, Carrie, and we talk about food and horror movies. We are, we started, 2020 during COVID, and I can't believe we're not as many episodes, but we're still trucking along. We're actually recording this week, so stay tuned. I think this month is Guillermo del Toro month for us. We're gonna do Pan's Labyrinth and Shape of Water, I think is what we decided. So
are you gonna do fish sticks?
I did deviled eggs on my food blog for Shape of Water. I did salmon, salmon deviled eggs, and they were delicious.
Yes,
we went through a phase. That's another project that has kind of died a little bit. We joke. So I run Geeks Who Eat with my husband, and Geeks Who Eat went from being like us trying to make a business out of it back to hobby level. Like we are way back at hobby level with it. He just works a lot, and so the time that you need, and with content now, you have to do everything on TikTok and video. No, we throw recipes up when we feel like it is kind of where we're at. Mm-hmm. Or if we have someone local, like a PR company locally who needs a recipe for a movie, we'll do one. We just did one for Dune. Nice. We did a Water of Life mocktail because we wanted something that wasn't going to poison bodies. So we did that, and so that's like one of my other side projects. Go ahead.
So then you have a new role with CFF.
Yes, I have taken on a role as a, I don't even know what my title is anymore. I'm a community manager. That's it. Community manager, which basically means that during the festival, I'll help out on the Discord. I'll be kind of like the one who's texting Chris like, hey, someone on the Discord needs something. Can I send it to them? Yes. Okay. So kind of like that. Like if y'all have a problem on Discord, I'll probably be your go-to kind of gal.
That's for the.
But I also have been helping with pre-screening and stuff like that as well. So.
That's awesome. Yeah. Congratulations. And when is Chattanooga Film Festival this year?
Chattanooga is in June. I want to say it's the 21st, but going to pull this up because I don't want to get it wrong as a community manager. That would look really, really bad. We are going from June 21st. I was right. Through the 23rd in person, and then it's June 21st through the 28th virtual, because virtual is coming back, folks. And that is one of the reasons that I love Chattanooga as much as I do. I champion Chattanooga because their festival programmer, Chris, he's also the showrunner, everything, you name it. He absolutely unequivocally believes that accessibility is the key. And as I said, and I think my Twitter post or my Instagram post, Chattanooga Film Fest fights for the user. It is a total Tron thing. Like they really believe in making sure that audiences can see filmmakers' movies, and they don't believe in exclusivity. the Chattanooga Discord server group, like every year is just like such a fun group of people to watch movies with. And I've met you guys through that. I've mm-hmm. met other, you know, great folks through that. And I think that it's something that's just important to keep doing.
Mm-hmm. And when you say he fights for the user, he absolutely like genuinely fights.
Yeah,
like
he fights.
Has to argue with studios and people to say, please let us do this virtually. We want more people to see your movie. And he will fight them to make that happen.
Yeah, they try to make it so that if there is an in-person only movie, there's a virtual only movie. Like they try to make it a fair balance of if you're getting something in person only, you're going to get something, you know, just as cool virtually mm-hmm. as well.
All right. And then do we have any new announcements this week from CFF?
Not yet,
but they will be, there will be soon announcements of the first wave and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. So I'll excited for that. And then, so you're here to talk to us, help us review Scare Package 2, Rad Chad's Revenge.
Yes.
But you have a very personal connection with this movie. Why don't you tell us how you got involved and all about that?
Well, I don't know that y'all will see my shirt, but I am rocking my Scare Package Fan Club President shirt because I declared myself way back when Scare Package came out on Twitter. It was a joke, actually. I was like, I'm the Scare Package Fan Club president. And I just constantly was saying it. It was a hashtag. I would talk to people about it. And so I became friends with the Paper Street folks. We chatted a lot. And I was very loud about their movie. I had them on Final. I had Aaron and Jeremy. Jeremy is Rad Chad. On Final Girls Feast. And I've been a fan ever since. And so during, you know, the quarantine part of the pandemic, I should say, because we're still in one. I had a Discord birthday party and I invited Aaron and Jeremy. I was like, hey, come hang out on Discord. It's a bunch of us. We're all just goofing around, drinking. And, you know, this was, I think, this had to have been I don't think it was my 2020 birthday. I think it was 2021 birthday. And at that point, I couldn't say anything, but I got invited. Aaron was like, yeah, you should come out and be in Scare Package 2 as an extra. And I was like, okay. They're like, we'll pay for your hotel room. You just have to fly out there.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, cool. Didn't hear anything. And I was like, okay, whatever. He was just being nice. And then time passes. And then I get an email like, hey, if you're still interested, we're filming in like a month. And so do you want to like, and now mind you, this is like 2021. So I don't think I was vaccinated. I think I was vaccinated. Maybe not yet. I'm trying to think. I don't know if I was vaccinated. I don't know if vaccinations were a thing yet. They may have been.
We started early 2021, yeah.
Maybe I couldn't get it yet mm-hmm. when I went out. I don't remember. Either way, flying at that point was terrifying. Right. Like, I was double masked in the airport. I wouldn't eat or drink the whole way. You know, we filmed in Oklahoma. I get to Oklahoma. My Uber driver is listening to like right wing talk radio and was offended that I asked him to put on a mask. But I'm that bitch. Oh, yeah. Like I was like, can you put one on? Like, you know, I'm still sitting
stage of everything.
Yeah. And I mean, in my suitcase, I'm not going to lie. When I flew out there, I had a can of Lysol. I had a thing of Clorox wipes. I had hand sanitizer. I literally wiped down my entire hotel room, sprayed my entire hotel room, and did not leave my hotel room. Like, I did not go out into Oklahoma at all. I have been to the state. I saw the airport, and I saw the inside of my hotel room and where we shot. So, but I can now say I've been in a horror movie. My joke is you didn't see me die. So as I'm hoping that if they ever do more, I'll get to do like the Stan Lee cameo where I'm just like, I kind of just show up everywhere. I'm hoping. If Paper Street is listening, y'all, I will fly wherever you want me to fly in the world.
That goes for me too. If anybody's listening who wants to fly me out there, or I will fly out there. Sarah may have been the first one to post it, but I also watched this at CFF the year it came out. It was by far my favorite movie of the whole fest. So big, big Scare Package fan. We did an episode on it just like a couple weeks ago.
I'm a big Scare Package and Joe Bob fan. So when Joe Bob was in there, I died. I died. The first time I saw it was not at Chattanooga. It was during the Joe Bob episode.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Which is on the Blu-ray, by the way. If you buy the Blu-ray, you get the Joe Bob episode, which is really cool. Like, they don't have a lot of those. But I had a lot of fun at the shoot, and I don't know if now is the time to talk about that, but...
We'll get to it in just a minute.
That's...
Yeah. Okay, so this came out. I couldn't find the exact date, but I know it was 2022. I think it was summer. It's a Shudder exclusive. Jody, you ready to unpack a lot of plot here?
Oh, I've got so many notes. There's a reason why I said let's not do the news segment tonight. Yeah. And mainly it was because my notes app was getting so full. I'm like, I'm going to talk too much now. So let's not hear me talk more later.
All right. Well, give us a plot synopsis.
All right. So we'll kind of break it into chunks, but let's start with the beginning here. This movie follows directly after, like, not like the next day, but it follows the first movie. Jessie, the final girl from the first movie, is attending Rad Chad's funeral. She's the one who survived the Devil's Lake Impaler and blew him up at the end of the first movie. And so you got all these people at this funeral for Rad Chad. Jessie's there. There's a British chimney sweep version of Rad Chad floating around out there, who's like a cousin. He's just kind of around.
That's Beau Buckley.
Okay. Bo Buckley, his cousin.
Okay, when that guy was first on screen, or whenever you kind of see him in the background, I thought he was the boom mic operator.
Oh, yeah. It does kind of look like...
He's got a long pole with a fuzzy thing on the back. I'm like, I thought it was like some meta joke that they're like, you can see the boom mic hanging out.
So it's funny, though, because I don't know if you've picked it up, but in most of the Aaron B. Kuntz directed Paper Street movies, there is always a Buckley.
Oh.
And they are all relatives. Like in The Pale Door.
Yeah.
Is it Bill Buckley, I think? And then Camera Obscura, I think, is a Buckley. And so that has been a running joke in Aaron's movies.
Nice. I will have to look
it up. It was very out of place.
Yeah. No, but
If you're in these movies, then you definitely mean something.
No, I thought he was perfect. Chimney sweep, British Rad Chad. You also have not the goo guy, but the actor who played the goo guy as the actor who played the goo guy with a bunch of fans who were all just like excited to see him. You've got Rich Sommer, who is in Summer of 84, I think was his big one. Love that movie. Graham Skipper, who's in tons of indie stuff.
Hold on. Rich Sommer's also Harry from Mad Men.
Oh, yeah, that too. That little show.
Yeah. Because I was like, wait, is that really him? Like, I thought it was a lookalike for a second.
I'm a genre guy, okay? That's where I go.
I socially distanced sat next to him at the funeral.
Yeah. Kelly Maroney is there from Night of the Comet, and she's just... awesome, you know, one of these scream queens.
Did you pick up that her name was Miss Kapowski?
I did. Miss Kapowski is in
like Kelly Kapowski.
Yeah. this is okay. So I've watched this movie a couple times. Every time I watch, I find more little references sprinkled. They are packed into this movie, even more so than the first movie, I think. Just it's like every scene, there's like a million little visual gags or names or something floating around out there. She plays Jessie's mom, and of course, Sarah is there at the funeral as well. And a video screen or a TV is rolled out with a video of Rad Chad addressing the crowd, and he said, you know, I've died because of, and then he lists various death scenarios until they pick the right one. I thought it was a funny scene. And then suddenly gas starts leaking out from behind the casket, the doors get locked, everyone starts panicking and running around. There's an incredible My Girl joke in there that it cracked me up so much. I think I tweeted at him as soon as I heard that one the first time about Rad Chad not being able to see without his glasses in the coffin. Just chef's kiss. Beautiful. And then a part of that group then wakes up in a room where another TV is, and Rad Chad's on there saying, you know, I want to play a game. And he laughs maniacally, and that's when our first segment starts. So there's only four, like, anthology segments in this one because the wraparound is like a real movie in and of itself. It's a whole movie happening. It's not just, like, little connective tissue.
Yeah, so the whole wraparound is, like, an homage to Saw.
Saw and many other things.
A bunch of Saw, like, sequences. And then they reel out the TV, and then Rad Chad shows up.
Technically, if I'm going to not spoil the ending too much, but it's technically a Saw 2 reference.
Yes. But, we will get into spoilers by the time we get there. So, but yes. Yeah.
But then he's like saying, but then he's telling them, okay, this is my movie recommendation for you. So he's still doing his movie recommendations from the first.
Right. Yeah, the game that he plays with them involves movie recommendations. So he shows his first movie, and that is our first segment called Welcome to the 90s. And in this segment, we see a slasher getting ready to attack a sorority house, and there's two sorority houses. One is the Final Girl House, and one is the, what was the name of it? Like, Sure to Die or something like that. Yeah, Sure to Die.
SPD.
Yeah. The slasher, we go around the Final Girl House, we meet all the girls. There's Ellen and Jenny and Nancy and Sally. So, you know, you got Aliens, Friday the 13th Part 2, Nightmare on Elm Street, Texas Chainsaw. And the killer shows up at that house.
Jody, don't forget there's a Lori.
I hadn't got to Lori yet. Lori hasn't made her appearance yet. The killer shows up and they tell him that he's at the wrong house. You know, you need to go next door to those other girls. But instead of leaving, he kills Lori. Laurie Strode. They say, you know, this is a mistake. We're not like the other girls. You know, we're not the girls who go and party. Like, we're studious and, you know, we're not supposed to get killed. But then Sally gets killed with saran wrap a la Black Christmas style. And about that time, Buffy from next door shows up. She's dressed as a cheerleader. She's popular. She's wearing makeup. She's looking for a beer bong. She attacks the killer. The girls keep trying to run away, and Buffy finds them again, and she's drinking whiskey out of a turkey baster. Which, is that supposed to be a, what's that movie? Don't Breathe? Is that a Don't Breathe reference with a turkey baster?
I hope not.
It's nasty if it is. It's a nasty reference if it is.
But, and one thing to note, it's New Year's Eve.
Yes, New Year's Eve.
Which becomes, like, a plot point.
Yeah. They decide that they're going to basically use Buffy as bait because they don't like her. She's a party girl. She's out having fun. And they're the ones who are supposed to survive because they act the way they're supposed to. And so they give her a final girl makeover so that she looks kind of like them and can distract the killer. And then the remaining girls decide, why don't we party? And they're very bad at it at first until they start getting drunk. And once they start getting drunk, partying comes easy. And they put on makeup and listen to music and dance. And then Tony shows back, or Tony is the killer. He shows back up and Buffy cuts off his leg with a chainsaw and accidentally kills a frat boy in the process. But, you know, things happen. Buffy basically tells the girls, like, you know, none of us deserve to live or die based on, like, if we're the virtuous girl or not. Like, the party girls can live. It's the 90s now. We're not in the 80s where you have to act a certain way to be worthy of living through the horror movie. And even the fun girls can be the hero now. And so basically, that's where it wraps up. They do... What happens to the killer? I don't remember. Is that it? I'm suddenly blanking. Does the killer die, or does he just get his leg cut off at that part? He disappears.
I don't remember. I literally just watched this today, and I'm like,
yeah, there's so much happens in this movie.
I literally watched this less than 12 hours ago, and I'm
absolutely. I'm suddenly forgetting what happened to the killer because I was so wrapped up in the whole point about, like, you know, like different kind of girls can survive, and I forgot.
Well, I infamously didn't love the first Scare Package. There's some parts I like, but overall, I know. But
I'm just owning this
I'm
opinion.
I'm just going to say it right now. I like this the second one a lot better.
I will say that Scare Package, I liked it when it first came out. It was the second viewing that Scare Package. I was like, oh my God, this is so smart. Like when I watched it for Final Girls Feast, I was like, wait a minute, this is so smart. Like, this is hilarious. Like, it took me a minute. And I think as much as I love Joe Bob, watching it in the Joe Bob format really took away from it because they did, the way they did it was like they did like the Joe Bob numbers for every like vignette. And it just became too much and it pulled you out of the movie. But then when I watched it the second time, I was like, oh man, this is one of my favorite movies. Like, how the hell,
I wouldn't recommend watching any movie for the first time, Joe Bob style, because it just breaks up, you know, a lot of the
movie.
I don't know. Cannibal Holocaust with Joe Bob was the only way I think I could have done it.
Well, okay. That's
like, there are some movies where I'm like, thank God Joe Bob is giving me a break.
That's a very singular experience of a movie. like I said in the last, when we did the first one, I did watch bits of the first one again, and it still kind of bugged me in a lot of the same ways. I didn't watch the whole thing, so I didn't have the time to do that. But I love this segment. I really, really like it. And it's called, so there's like a point where they're like talking about the year, like this, like 1989. And then the segment's called Welcome to the 90s. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as like the Buffy character showed up and like the killer wouldn't go after her, or she was still a party girl, but she was a much stronger character. I'm like, okay, I get what's going on here. They're talking about how like we start going to the 90s, the woman became more empowered.
In the 90s, you had Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And
exactly.
She
it was Buffy the Vampire
Slayer. And in the movie, she was a cheerleader.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
And
so it's all about like.
They didn't have to act the traditional 80s Final Girl way of.
Exactly.
You could have a good girl.
You could have outwardly pretty Final Girls, Neve Campbell, et cetera. The short was because I never really thought about like the changeover from like 80s to 90s. So I thought that was actually really well done where we can still respect all the kick-ass characters from the 70s and the 80s, but we're kind of the 90s kind of brought in kind of a new wave, which, you know, a lot of the feminism, progress in the 90s, you know, the women's roles were being changed a lot of film. But the women of the 70s and 80s had to pave the way for those other women, to be the strong, but yet still party and still be, you know, again, conventionally pretty, or, you know, they don't have to wear glasses to make them seem like they're, you know, a good girl. So I really liked that commentary on there. I thought that was actually, compared to anything in the first one, I thought this was a lot better, thought out.
See, the first time I watched the first one, I think I was so just wrapped up in how much fun it was that I missed some of the smartness of it. Like the goo guy segment, still one of my favorite. I'll watch that 1,000 times.
I will say that director, Chris McInroy, I'm not a body horror person at all.
I love his
but
stuff.
I will watch anything he puts out and die. Like absolutely on the floor dying, because he has a way of making body horror be gross and gooey, but not feel so like, oh God, that could happen to me. Oh no. Oh, oh. And it doesn't like set off my hypochondria, which is why I typically hate body horror, because I'm weird like that.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
I think that was my favorite segment of the first movie. And I think because it's so fun and just it's so well done and it's something, it's just fun. Where I felt like a lot of the quote commentary and the meta parts of the first movie had been done to death. Where I felt like there's a lot more newer, fresher ideas in this second movie. And like even having the Saw wraparound, you know, Saw's been out for 15, maybe 20, almost 20 years now. But at least it's like, we haven't, and there's definitely been parodies, but there haven't been that many. So having that be the wraparound, I thought, okay, this is something we haven't really seen as much as we have.
I can tell you there is one parody that you absolutely should skip. It's called Slaw. It's a gastro horror. Mm. You would think that I would love that, right? Oh, no. They had to, like, throw in, like, some casual bigotry jokes. And I was like, oh, no. Why? Like, if they had left those all out, it would have been hilarious. Like, it would have actually been really good. And I was like, y'all just, like, could have made it. You could have had Slaw. Come on. That is, like, so genius. And y'all just dropped the ball.
But, yeah. So I really like that they went with the Saw wraparound parody. Yeah. So like at least that was I feel like that has been done to death. And I feel like especially in this first segment, the Welcome to the 90s, the ideas of the changing in female presentation from you know 70s, 80s, and the 90s is something that we haven't really thought of in that way. So well done on that one.
What I was saying too though is you know the first time I saw it, I was so just wrapped up in how fun it was. The Goon Guy, the stuff like the Joe Bob stuff, it was just fun. It was exciting because I hadn't seen anything that fun in a long time. And when I watched this movie the first time, it wasn't quite as wacky. And so I think I left going, well, this isn't as fun as the last movie. On a rewatch, though, I'm like, I think this one may actually be smarter than the first movie.
Yes,
100%. Because it's got a lot of things to say that maybe the first one didn't have as much, you know, like a little more parody in the first one. And this one is a more like, let's talk about the genre.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
This one kind of reels it in. Like the first one has a lot more segments. Mm-hmm. And this one, they're like, I feel like they were like, okay, well, instead of having like, you know, six segments, let's have like four really good ones.
Yes. Yeah. Now, yeah, that was another big issue with the first one. It was just way too many segments, way too much. And also the wraparound was just so like all over the place. Again, this one I felt like stuck to it.
I love Rad Chad though, so if you give me a wraparound with Rad Chad, I don't care. Like I'm just like let Jeremy King just be Rad Chad on camera for like hours, and I will watch it and die. I mean, I have a Rad Chad doll. I have one of them. There are only a few of these in existence.
Is it made of Jeremy King's hair?
What's that? No.
Is it made of Jeremy King's hair?
No, I'm not that creepy. Like, I'm a fan, but not that much of a fan.
Okay, Jody, let's move on.
Okay, so after that first segment, we go back to the wraparound. And I'm going to say that a lot, back to the wraparound, because they go back to the... Yes. So in this, as this part starts, a hooded man in the shadows on a video screen tells them that they've been poisoned, and they all kind of think it's an escape room type thing, until the girl who said the My Girl joke earlier pukes acid all over Rich Summers' character, and melts his arm off, and then everyone around them starts puking. And I just love this scene because it's so out of nowhere, and I feel like Chris McEnroy has to be involved at this point, because the Goo Guy's bodyguard, in slow motion, goes to protect him, and instead they share a long, slow, gentle kiss in slow motion.
That was pretty good. I like that.
Did you notice that Kirk is wearing a Goo Guy shirt?
Yeah.
I have that shirt. not the one he wore, but I own that shirt. Stealing
the clothes off their body. Leave the stat.
Yeah, I'm just like, I'll take this with me.
And then as they kiss each other, or right after they kiss each other, they get puked on, and then they puke on each other, and they basically melt until they become one goo guy together as they combine all their gooiness. It's great. And then a beer pong table suddenly arrives from the ground with barbed wire around the cups, and there's a force field. There's a lot happening here. But the My Girl joke girl gets melted by Kelly Maroney, who pukes on her. And so we're down to just a few people. Graham Skipper, his character apparently was Rad Chad's college roommate. They played a lot of beer pong together. And the antidote is in the cups as long as they hit the right number. You know, honestly, how all this all works, I don't know. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
We get a full 80s style like montage song playing while he plays the beer pong. It's fantastic. It's over the top. It's in slow motion. And they actually managed to all get the antidote.
You have to use clues from the segment they just watched to figure out the number. It's a whole very convoluted thing.
Yeah.
Like my every Saw movie.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And again, that's why I'm like, okay, I'm kind of writhing with this.
So anyway, they get the antidote. More gas knocks everyone out again. This time when they wake up, they're chained to a wall. And Rad Chad introduces the next segment, The Night He Came Back Again, Part 6, The Night She Came Back. Love that title.
Mm-hmm. Anthony Cousins.
Yeah. All right, so this segment, segment number 2, is a sequel to the segment in the first Scare Package movie, where in that movie there was the unkillable killer who they kept trying to kill multiple ways, and he kept surviving. And so this is that same final girl from that. And we see her fighting with that killer before an older man shows up and talks about how he's pure evil and shoots him. And he's the Dr. Loomis. I mean, that's who he is. And he almost reveals something about the killer to, I don't remember what her name is, the final girl. Anyway, the final girl. He almost reveals something about her. And he gets killed mid-sentence, find out it's a nightmare. She wakes up from it and tells her husband, not boyfriend. I didn't know that until it happened later on that they make a point of bringing that out. But her husband, that she has to go back in case the killer comes back. And he goes with her. It's the cabin from her dreams. There's a gravestone out front with 4 different death dates listed for the killer, which I thought was really fun. But his hand comes out of the ground. He's not dead yet. About that time, that doctor from earlier walks downstairs. He's alive, but his throat's been slit. He has to talk with a device. He reveals that the killer is her brother, but she already knows that. But he says the bond is much deeper, and you are, and then he gets killed again.
Her name is Daisy, by the way.
What's that?
Her name is Daisy.
Daisy, that's right. I even had.
And the actress is also an Anthony Cousins Frogman.
Oh, okay, cool. Oh, is that new movie that just came out?
Uh-huh.
I didn't realize that was Anthony Cousins. I'm going to have to see it now. Because I like this segment in both movies. So anyway, the doctor comes down and gets killed again. Her husband gets attacked. And she finds that the killer is not actually the killer, like her dead guy who keeps dying over and over. It's one of the guys from the first segment who was like the nice guy who wanted to get with her, but she wasn't interested in him, just wanted to be friends. But then he gets killed by the actual killer, who then snaps, and it's right here in my notes, it says Daisy. He snaps Daisy's neck, twisting her head all the way around. Then the husband, not boyfriend, they make a point of it, gets killed. He says, you know, I died a husband and not a boyfriend. And then the formerly dead Daisy stands up. And the dying doctor, who talking in a tiny little squeaky voice because his little voice thing is broken, tells her that she's indestructible just like him, just like her brother. And so then she goes after the killer full force, attacks him with a sledgehammer, throws a giant bottle rocket in his grave. But before she can get away, he grabs her, drags her into the grave with her. They both explode, spilling blood and organs everywhere. And then all the pieces reassemble themselves. But this is the second time two people have been combined in this movie, combining themselves into a half Daisy, half killer as she screams and the segment ends. So before I go on, let's talk about the segment.
No, I thought the effects in this one were really fun. When she stood up, I was expecting everyone to start standing up and be like, I guess none of us can die now if this guy can't. But no, it's fun. This is a fun one. The other one was a fun episode, was a silly but fun. The first one, this is a fun continuation of that. And I love like a good Ahab character.
Well, and what did you think about the lead in here with our beer pong and all that stuff?
It felt, again, I kind of appreciated it just because it's trying to emulate a silly Saw trap, and it's like only like a step further than how silly Saw traps tend to be. Like you can almost see a beer pong trap in a Saw movie.
I don't think John Kramer is much of a beer pong player. Maybe Hoffman.
I'm just saying, like, it's only a couple steps more ridiculous than Saw already is.
That's why I say that's why I say a Hoffman trap versus a Kramer trap.
Right.
So I've had arguments with people about which traps are Hoffman and which are Kramer because of that.
Yeah. puking on each other is kind of funny. It was a good lead up. So yeah, I didn't dislike this one. It's probably tied for second on my list for this movie.
Yeah, I think it's a fun segment. I mean, I like the first one, and I like this continuation of that story of the indestructible killer. I think it's fun. Mm-hmm. It's playing with those tropes. Obviously, you get the Dr. Loomis in there, and you just get some like straight up silliness of like the Dr. Loomis character explaining all the important stuff with a tiny little squeaky voice because his little voice thing broke. You know, just a fun combination of recognizable tropes and silliness and blood and guts and cool effects. Like, yeah, everything's good here. I like it. And now I need to see Frogman.
Sarah, what do you think of this one?
I'm not a huge slasher fan, but I do like that it plays with the trope of, like, you know, in order to, like, die, both must die. Like, if one lives, the other lives. Like, I like that whole, because that's very, like, Halloween and Laurie Strode, and so I appreciate that.
All right, back to me talking more.
Just like, discuss longer.
There's so much happening in this movie. All right, back to the wraparound. We start with a little puppet Chad on TV.
Little Chad! I want a little Chad so bad. They only made one, though. I was like, Aaron, if you don't have room for him, I will give him a home. I want a little Chad so bad. I was like, you need to make them. You need to sell them. Yeah, people would buy them. I want one so bad.
Yeah, little puppet Chad's on TV, and then they decide to try to figure out who's doing this to them. And Rick, I don't know why he knows this, but he says, I think the killer's Sam. He was Rad Chad's only customer. And in the first movie, he's kind of the annoying guy in the movie.
He wants to work there.
Yeah. And at that point, Sam rolls in from the shadows in a wheelchair, setting up a great gag later on, and tells them that they didn't appreciate Chad or horror enough, and so that's why all this is happening. Very, very Jigsaw in the, you know, you didn't appreciate what you had, except for this time it's specifically Rad Chad and horror. And the gas starts up again, and Sam puts on an oxygen mask. And when everyone wakes up this time, they have wooden beekeeper masks things, like Nicolas Cage, Wicker Man, beekeeper things on their heads. And there's Sam appears on the TV in a pig mask and tells them that he put 10,000 bees inside of them.
Not inside the mask, inside of their bodies.
Inside of them. They don't believe it at first, but then the bees start coming out of them like, bee came out of your arm. Just perfectly silly. Graham Skipper tries dancing to keep from being stung. He's like, you know, you have to be busy as a bee. It doesn't work. Chimney Sweep Chad is killed by, I know he has a name, but Chimney Sweep
Buckley.
Chad. Oh, Buckley. Oh, Buckley is killed by the bees. And then they just realized they could take the mask off. Like, they could just pull them off. That's all they had to do, and walk over and pick up a key. And then a light comes on revealing tables with spoonfuls of cinnamon. And the funeral home employee reveals or says that, you know, oh, cinnamon, I use them to keep the bees away. So the cinnamon will kill the bees. But first they have to eat a spoonful of cinnamon, like the cinnamon challenge. So they do that. They're all coughing and gagging. And then the funeral home lady says, it's too late for me. I'm allergic to bees. And she starts giving an inspirational speech. And every time the camera cuts back to her, she has more giant blisters and boils all over her face until she's just like straight mutated. It's very gross and very funny. And then her head explodes.
Yeah, the effects on her as she's like just getting more and more allergic are really, really good, really fun, really pussy. I love it.
Yeah, really nasty stuff. And then this time they wake up in a room filled with chains hanging from the ceiling. And that's when our third segment starts. This one is special edition. And from the very beginning, complete treat here. It's directed by Jed Shepard, and it stars all five of the main ladies from the movie Host, which was directed by Jed Shepard. I just remember being so excited seeing them all like in one screen at once. I'm like, they're not all in their own little individual Zoom windows.
My notes show that he wrote and produced it, but he didn't actually direct Host.
Okay, that's right. Rob Savage directed Host.
Okay.
Jed wrote and produced. Either way.
They're the creative force behind it.
Yes. And so all five of them are trying to find the ghost in the movie Three Men and a Baby, which is a longtime urban legend about this boy who either died or committed suicide. I think technically it's just like a cardboard cutout of Ted Danson in the background. But anyway, it's one of those things that during the VHS era, people thought there was a ghost in the movie because he appears like back behind some stuff. So they get a laser disc of the movie and try to see the ghost. And they have it paused on this scene where the ghost is supposed to be. And then all of a sudden, the curtains in the picture like move, even though it's a paused still screen. And everyone freaks out. And I don't remember all the character names here. I don't even know if they're mentioned. So I'm going to call them by their actual names, which are also their character names and Host. Because I remember all their names from Host, because I've watched Host multiple times. So Emma gets scared by something moving on the image on her phone. And she throws it down. And there's like a thing projecting out of her phone, and Gemma is downstairs rewinding and playing the movie. And when she does, the killer like moves in the same way within the house. So like if she fast forwards, killer moves really fast. If she hits play, the killer moves at normal speed, that kind of thing. And so the killer moves that same way. He kills Haley, and Emma finds Haley's headless body, and the killer kills her too and sprays Caroline with blood. And when Gemma skips a chapter on the laser disc, the killer disappears. Gemma goes back a chapter, the killer reappears, Caroline stabbed through the back, and then Gemma rewinds it, and Caroline is unstabbed. I don't know exactly how that works, but she's not dead anymore. So she goes down to Gemma and gets stabbed in the back again. I think she even says not again. And Gemma tries to point the remote at the killer, but the batteries are not working. And at this point, Caroline, who is not completely dead yet, she like touches the TV, and from inside the TV, she reaches out and grabs the killer and pulls him into the TV. When Gemma stops the video from playing, his head gets cut off. And then she turns the scene back on and sees all of her friends paused in that scene that they were looking at earlier.
All right, Sarah, what do you think of this one?
Actually, this is my least favorite segment of the whole movie. I really was hoping Jed would do something more like found footage, because that seems to be like a little bit where I think he's good. And I think aesthetically, it's really well shot. It looks really good. It's got a vibe, but the story just did not work for me. Like, I was just like, eh. Like, I didn't hate it, but I'm not like, it's not one that I'm like, oh, this is super memorable. Oh, you have to see this one segment in Scare Package 2. Like, I wanted more. I just remember being a little disappointed. And today I was still like, eh, it's not that for me.
Yeah, I agree. I got excited to see all those characters. And then when I like was kind of looking through to see who was the director, that was like the Host reunion. I was like, okay, cool, I'm down for this. And all those actresses are so charismatic. I was like, okay, this is cool. But it's a cool premise but it just was not executed very. I think it was the editing, because it's a very abstract idea that they're trying to do, and they rushed through it way too quickly. And I like thought, okay, so I watched this Friday night. It's my, you know, later on after a long night, you know, long week and everything. And I was just kind of chilling, you know, vibing a bit. And I'm like, did I miss fall asleep for a minute and miss an important piece of information? So I rewatched at least that segment today. And I'm like, no, it's exactly how I remember it. And I'm like, there's just something wrong, I think, in the edit. It just didn't come together.
It's a short, it feels like a short film that, you know, when you see it at a festival, you're like, okay, why did that not have like 10 more minutes on it? Like, it needed a little bit more background. It needed to explain its world building a little bit better. And I get that the vibe was supposed to be similar to like The Ring. But like, if you look at Ringu and The Ring, both movies are not short movies. Like, they explain how, why, you know, and this, because it's an anthology segment, doesn't have the time to do that. But I feel like because of that, it just feels like it's missing something.
Yeah, it's way too ambitious for what they had to work with.
Yeah, no, I think the time constraints was probably the biggest thing they had going against them here. Because if they could have gone into a little more detail, I think it would have helped. I mean, obviously, like, you can see the budget in this one a lot more because it does, like, CGI stuff instead of some of the practical effects. And I know it's a low-budget movie, so I'm pretty forgiving. But at the same time, the CGI doesn't look great when the like, killer guy does finally appear. And so it feels a little more incomplete than some of the other ones. The other ones feel very much like a well-thought-out idea. This is a neat idea, and it harkens to some stuff from the early 2000s, late 90s. But it just doesn't feel like fully fleshed out, you know?
Yeah. Again, for a very ambitious idea of using the remote to control the killer back and forth and then people coming at TVs and stuff. I like the gag of when she press ejects that the screen like goes off and cuts his head off. That was good. But kind of everything else just wasn't executed very well.
I do think I appreciated it more this time, but yeah, it's probably my least favorite as well.
Mm-hmm. I do like the B segment, though, because I think I'm one of the, like, you know, 10 people on planet Earth that don't hate Nicolas Cage's Wicker Man. I think it's not a good movie, but it's a fun as hell movie to watch. And so I love that little nod. And I thought it was like, I think I pissed the bees off more by dancing. It just stung my kidney.
Well, and I did love the, you know, I put 10,000 bees inside you. Like, just how stupid that is. It's perfect. Like, I like that it's ridiculous like that.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So this time, though, with our wraparound, a little tricycle rolls in by itself, and then little Chad, jigsaw puppet, walks in and gets on it and just sits down. And then the TV starts showing some random clips, and then we get Sam emerging out of the TV, Dream Warrior style, with his head coming out of the top and his arms coming out of both sides. And I hope you noticed one hand has blades and the other hand has syringes. Mm. It's full, like, Dream Warriors references all over the place.
Okay, and I did not wear this t-shirt specifically because of that. Hey, subliminally.
So he pops out of the TV like that, and he says, now one of you is going to have to take a camera into this dark room and find a key, and if you fail, your friends will be skinned alive. And so Kelly Maroney's character has chosen to go find the key. So we get the little found footage thing of her, like, wandering around with the night vision, you know. And that shows on the TV that Sam is now a part of. And while she's going, Graham starts getting whipped by chains. Sorry, this is one of the funniest things to me. Graham starts getting whipped by chains. And she finds the key, but something attacks her in the dark, and the camera goes off. And he's getting whipped the whole time. Nobody else is getting whipped. I love it when he asks, like, is this just happening to me? Is this going to happen to anyone else? And when she dies, Graham ends up fully skinned, a la Hellraiser, laying on the ground with the "I am in hell, help me" written in blood on the wall. Kelly reappears. She actually did survive, and she has the key in her mouth, and she frees everyone from the chains, but then Sam goes back on the deal and slices her to pieces, I guess, with flying chains, because you can do anything with flying chains, as Pinhead has pointed out before. So yeah, obviously a lot of Hellraiser riffing here. Gas again, and everyone's knocked out again. But this time Jesse's mad, though, because that was her mom. And they all wake up wearing collars, and Rad Chad, on video again, introduces the final segment, "We're So Dead." All right. Whew. So much plot. A man is remembering when he was a kid, and he's got this, like, diverse friend group, you know, like Stand By Me. It's, you know, me and my buddy, who's like the nerdy kid. And then we've got, like, the ethnic kid and the girl. Like, it's the 80s, like, putting, you know, a group of kids together.
Stephen King. Yeah,
Stephen King style. And they find a dead body. like Stand By Me, but instead of just, you know, finding the dead body, they take it back home with them and pull out some glowy reanimator serum to bring him back to life. And right after they inject this homeless man with reanimator signal, the mom comes in and checks on him, like, from the top of the stairs. I do love this reoccurring thing of the mom keeps coming around, but she never actually, like, checks on the kids. Like, she stays upstairs. She says at one point, like, I open this soundproof door for 1 minute. Because 80s kids could do whatever they wanted. No parents ever watched them. And so that's the mom never actually checks to see what's happening. About that time, though, the dead guy sits up and yells, and the girl shoots him in the face and kills him again instantly. So they give him another injection, and they try to get him to talk, and what he says is, stop murdering me, and then bites off one of the kid's fingers. And he fights with some of the kids, and then he rips one of their throats out. This kid's named Jason. And they've been saying the whole time, one of the most important things is Jason's got to get home on time for dinner or his mom's going to be mad. And so they rip out Jason's throat. And then, like, right after this happens, the mom checks in again. She's like, you better not be reanimating dead bodies down there. And then the girl chops off the guy's head with a sword. So then they inject Jason with the serum. And we see that the dead man's head is sitting in a tray alive, talking to them. And he's making fun of them for how bad they are at this whole reanimation thing. They keep trying to reanimate Jason, but it keeps going wrong until we're at the point that he's like in pieces, like missing an arm and a leg on the ground. And of course, his throat's already been ripped out. And then the kid reveals, like, oh, we have a transporter. And he pulls back a curtain, and it's like a fly style transporter that's supposed to, like, move matter from one place to the next. And he said, you know, if we put Jason in there and transport him, he'll be reassembled on the other side. So, like, all of his limbs will be reattached. And so they do that. But as they do that, they realize the cat got in there with him. Is like praying at the table, and he comes and sits down while they have their eyes closed, and the mom and sister both scream because he's this hideous, like, half cat boy, and everyone's freaking out, and the friends watching through.
It's very sleepwalking.
Oh yeah, no, 100%. I love the makeup, actually. When I say hideous, I mean that lovingly. And the friends watching through the window say the title. They say, we're so dead. And in the present time, the writer gets up and says, you know, like, I'll never have friends as close as I did when I was 12. Will anybody? And then we see he's still got the homeless man's head, like, alive in a fish tank. I don't know how that part worked at the end, but I really like the segment. It's a lot of fun, especially just the references just pile up so fast in this one with the reanimator stuff and Stand By Me and the fly. And that's important for the next scene, too. All right. So that's that segment.
So, Sarah, what did you do with this one?
What's that?
Oh, said Sarah, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was good.
No, what did you think of this episode?
I like this one. I'm a Stephen King fan, so I liked the homage. I love Reanimator, so I always get excited seeing glowy Reanimator serum and Sleepwalkers. Like, that's one of the only movies that there's like a really amazing death by food sequence where somebody literally gets like stabbed in the back with a cob of corn.
It does happen.
So when I saw that, I was like, wow, gastro, this is like, you know, and I love that the kid's trying to get home for dinner. And like, that's like,
it's super important.
Very important.
It's so important that even while there's people getting their throats ripped out, they're still like, his mom's going to be so mad if he doesn't get home.
His mom's going to, we've got to get him home for dinner.
Even after his throat's ripped out.
I enjoyed this one. I like that it actually did a lot of subversions, which is something I find a lot of the other segments, especially in the first one, didn't really do much of, where you thought it was going one way, then went another. Like, never would have thought to see a Stand By Me, Reanimator / Fly mashup. We're like, what are we going to do with the buddy? We just happen to have reanimation serum. Why not? Oh, we also have a teleportation device. Where'd the cat go? It's fun. It wasn't like mind blowing or say any like any major commentary, but it was a good. It was a fun mashup and kind of made sense in a twisted way. I like that when the cat boy comes home and no one like recognizes, like no one's paying attention at first after they say their prayers over the food. And then when they see him, they start freaking out, then they start praying again. He's just, they're like, okay, I'm just going to lick my own milk. Yeah. This is just life
and
now.
And it says he lived a long, semi-normal life. Mm-hmm. I think it's fun. To me, this one takes place in a universe where all of those movies exist. I don't know how all the elements end up in this one basement, but they do. And I like that world. I want a world where all this weirdness is just happening all the time.
Yeah, I like the mom. That was a fun
one. Well, and even she's like into the weirdness of this world because, you know, she says something like, you better not be reanimating a dead homeless person. You know, like this is a world where these kind of things are the shenanigans kids get into.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that was the 80s, right.
That's
man.
What we did.
We just were transient.
You know, hanging out with their friends, stay out late, reanimate dead bodies. That's what I did.
I mean, you're not still doing that?
I do, but not everyone.
Let's be real. Jody, I'm not staying up that late anymore.
Jody has moved on to creating them the old-fashioned way. a lot of them.
All right, so back to the wraparounds. This is our... The people who are left, and there's not many of them. I think Rick and Skinless Graham and Jesse and her girlfriend. Yeah, Kimmy. Those are the ones who are left at this point. And they're in Rad Chad's video Emporium. Sam comes on TV, tells them that you have to find the movies that inspired that last segment. And if you don't, then your collars will explode when this timer finishes counting down. So they first recognize Stand By Me, find the VHS of Stand By Me. They say Pet Cemetery. And they try to argue with Sam. And so he decides to release the Devil's Lake Impaler into the video store. The same Devil's Lake Impaler from the first movie in the final segment, Who Did Kill Joe Bob? Supposedly, like by the end of this movie, there's a lot of questions about who got killed and who killed who. Jesse's hand gets cut off because the Devil's Lake Impaler throws a blade through the air, and she throws Skinless Graham a VHS tape. He puts it in a rewinder, Be Kind Rewind, and it disables his collar. And so Jesse says, we need to find the other movies and get out the door. And Sam rolls into that door and says, oh, this door. And he tries to shut it, but because he's in a wheelchair, he can't reach the button. And so Jesse runs at the killer and does a long, slow motion slide under his weapon, grabs a machete and throws it at Sam, and it sticks into his face. And this was my favorite gag of the whole movie. We see Sam rolling down a set of stairs backwards with a machete in his face, just like Friday the 13th Part 2. It's my favorite, like... Of all the things to reference, Friday the 13th Part 2, the wheelchair rolling down the stairs. Just beautiful. I loved it. And so Sam's dead, at least as dead as anyone gets in this movie. Let's see. Jesse, the slow motion slides. Okay, so they find Pet Cemetery and rewind it. I think Kimmy is the one who does it this time. But the rewinder gets destroyed. Her neck thing gets disabled. Rick finds a copy of The Fly, but he gets hit by a dart. I love the image of the Devil's Lake Impaler pulling out a like blowgun and blowing a dart at him instead of, you know, chopping him up with a machete. But he hits him with a blow dart and starts falling asleep. Jesse finds a new rewinder and rewinds The Fly, so hers is disabled. And then Rick draws the killer in so that his collar will explode and hopefully explode them both. Three survivors run outside, and the impaler reappears, but they get through a door and close it just in time for more gas. Gas again, and this time they wake up in a room with a tape player or tape recorder hanging from the ceiling and a sign that says play me on it.
It's the funeral. Yeah. It's where the funeral was held, because you can see Red Chad's
casket. Right, we're back in the funeral home. And the voice on the tape says that Jesse is the final girl, but she's still ungrateful. She does not appreciate horror. And that's when Kimmy, her girlfriend, stands up and like gets a little key from somewhere. Where was the
necklace? Thank you. Necklace.
Yeah, there was a key in a shoe earlier too. But she gets a key out of her necklace, unlocks her chains, and stands up, and she hands Jesse another tape. And on that tape, Kimmy is talking and reveals that Rad Chad is her mentor. All right, this is our Saw 2. And then for another twist, Rad Chad sits up out of his coffin, alive this whole time. Even though his face was smashed in, he pulls off the makeup that is stuck to his face, no longer smashed in. And then he reveals that he's been behind everything, and including his own death, where he's been working with the Devil's Lake Impaler, and they set it all up to make it look like he died. And he held up like a fake Chad who got punched through the face. I love how stupid it is. Like, I mean that in the best way possible. He said, you know, I did this because I had the video store, and I couldn't survive at the video store because people weren't appreciating what they had. They didn't appreciate the horror. And so this is why I staged this whole thing and chose all these people. And then he slams the door, like in the first Saw, leaving Jesse and Graham in the dark, skinless Graham in the dark. And then he and Kimmy get in the car with the Devil's Lake Impaler and Han, the employee from the video store from the first movie. They get into a convertible and drive off into the distance together. And we get one little post-credits scene of Rad Chad calling, speaking to Papa. Papa.
Actually, there's two post-credit scenes. There's a mid-credit, and then there's the end.
Oh, I forgot about that other one. Well, this one.
Yes. The goo guy.
So there's a little goo guy thing in there too. But there's also him talking to Papa, and Papa is never stated out loud, but it is Joe Bob.
Well, he's asking about, you know, lamb, the lamb
calling
stuff.
Papa?
Calling
Papa?
For you.
Yeah. And that's how we end Scare Package 2.
During his little montage of people not appreciating, there's like a part where people are talking online mm-hmm. about horror movies and stuff. I have a second appearance because my name shows up there, though. I did not get to pick what my tweet was, which was, is Alien even a horror movie?
Oh, that was you.
And I was like, I actually think Alien is a horror movie though.
I'm on that side of that debate too.
Yeah, definitely.
So that was my other appearance in the film, was my spooky again, Sarah Says screen name.
Yeah, to wrap up my thoughts, I think the Saw, because Saw has just become like, I love the Saw movies. Well, okay, I love the first three Saw movies, I love the last one, but like those middle ones are just so ridiculous, and that I kind of appreciated that to match those ridiculous Saw movies with this zaniness worked really well for me. So yeah, overall, I liked the second one much better than I liked the first one. My favorite segment was the Welcome to the 90s, The Night She Came Back, and We're So Dead. I'm kind of tied on those. And again, Special Edition just had a lot of issues with it. But I do like do fun.
But do
it's
you?
It's possible. Yeah.
Let's not go too far.
Right, Sarah, what are your final thoughts?
I mean, I'm biased. I feel like I can't be an unbiased opinion on this movie because I'm in it. I shot my shot. I got to be in a horror movie and I didn't die. So, well, not that anyone saw. So I say I didn't die. I got out of the gas filled chamber.
If you don't see a body, you cannot count it.
Exactly. No. Exactly. So I'm just going to have moseyed off. I don't think you even see me walking, like running around when the smoke goes off. So I probably just like hightailed it out of there. I was like, well, this ain't for me. Peace out.
Just stuck in the bathroom or something.
Oh my gosh. The bathroom on that set was so scary. Let me tell you. This was like an old like floral warehouse. and it was 90 degrees in Oklahoma, and there was no air conditioning in this building. Like, we were all hanging out in small rooms with, like, those, like, little mini, like, air conditioner things that have, like, the long tube that you stick out a window so that it, the hot air goes away. Oh, it was so hot. And the bathroom, the upstairs bathroom, was old. So they're like, well, folks, please don't use a lot of toilet paper. And if you can help it, don't number two. Because the plumbing is real old.
That's a great show, Danny.
So I'm like over here, like, terrified to eat. I'm like, I'm going to just, like, you know, just drink enough to stay hydrated.
Survival.
I got back to my hotel room that night, and I had, like, a huge dinner because I was so hungry. Now, the catering was very lovely and it was delicious. I just was terrified to eat. But yeah. And I ended up sitting, like, it was kind of weird because I ended up sitting in rooms with the main cast without realizing it. Like, none of the other extras were there and nobody said anything to me. I'm just sitting there with my little book reading between scenes and, you know, and then hanging out with Jeremy, and Jeremy's acting crazy. And he kept telling me, he kept going, you know, when the camera pans your way, look directly in the camera. And Aaron would be like, don't do that, Sarah. I'm like, nah, really? It was really funny. He kept saying, why aren't you looking in the camera? Don't you believe me?
That's what extras are supposed to do, right?
That's what he kept saying. He was yourself. He's like, yeah. He's like, look, straight in, eyeball contact. And I was like, no, thank you. So you can see every time the camera pans on me, I'm always like, don't look. Look away.
That's great.
But it was a lot of fun. Was he on set
The whole time? Like, because obviously he's not in it, like, physically.
I was only there for one day.
Oh, okay.
So he was in the scenes that I was in. So... He was there the whole time I was there.
Nice. Cool.
Basically, right, Jordy, everybody was. Anyone who was in the funeral scene was there.
Okay. All right, Jordy, let's wrap up with your final thoughts.
I really like this one. I liked it the first time I saw it, and I've liked it since. But I think the more I watch it, the more I appreciate it. It's one that just gets better with time. More and more references. I mean, this is made for horror fans. The cast alone, the fact that they cast the people that they did, they included all the references that they did. And it's not just those shouting out references. They make it funny, you know, like the skinless thing and Graham getting whipped by the chains. Like, they make that a really funny scene, but also it's very obvious reference to Hellraiser. And, you know, it's one of those movies that, anytime I watch it, I'm smiling through 90% of it because there's something fun happening. There's something cool happening. There's something that I appreciate that, you know, I have a feeling a lot of people wouldn't get. But if you're the kind of nerd that I am, you're going to get a lot out of movies like this. And both of these movies are great. I want to be a member of Rad Chad's Video Club. I think you could still do that on Paper Street's website. You can order your own little, like, membership card and stickers and stuff. I haven't done that yet. I need to.
You can. I have most of their swag. I think the only thing I don't have at this point is, like, the big posters and the trading cards. Like, those are the only things I don't have. I have.
Yeah.
The lollipop. I have. I actually have the cassette tape. I bought it when they were. I think it was Ship to Shore was doing the cassette tapes of both movie soundtracks. So I have that. I have two copies of the Blu-ray.
We didn't talk about it, but this movie does have a badass soundtrack through the whole thing. Like, even though the different directors, it has the same guy doing the soundtrack through all of it, right?
Yeah, Alex Cuervo. Awesome. Alex Cuervo. And he's so good. He does a lot. He did, he also did Pale Door. Like, I really like his stuff. And I think he did a song in Revealer, okay. I think.
Well, I mean,
I don't think he did the whole synth stuff,
especially like that. Both these movies have a fantastic synth soundtrack. I love it.
Scare Package is pretty much every year, like, in my top three of most listened albums, because I listen to it a lot.
All right, Jody, what's your segment?
As far as the best segment, I think Welcome to the 90s is probably my favorite of the three or of the four. But I enjoy all these segments. Like I said, I think probably the Jed Shepherd one's probably the weakest one, but even that, like, I still have parts of it I enjoy. So overall a good time.
Okay. Well, that's our review. We're going to kind of speed things up a little bit.
I told you, I wrote way too many notes. Late,
but yeah, that's fine. All right, Mondo's not here for Song of the Day, so I picked one. The Song of the Day is Stand By Me, which was originally by... And I cannot find it. Yeah, but I'm doing the cover version by the band Pennywise. To wrap in...
Just throw in another horror reference. We need more.
Exactly. So Song of the Day, the cover of Stand By Me by the band Pennywise. Fantastic, at least in my opinion. A little more on the punk side of the punk rock coin. But, you know, they're kind of somewhere in the middle there. Good Epitaph band. Fun live. I saw them at Warped Tour a long time ago. Very, very fun. All right. We're skipping horror news because we just did it, but I do want to give a shout out to King Kong Godzilla minus one winning a freaking Oscar, which is amazing. You know, I thought I would have put it for many more categories, but you know, if you're gonna get visual effects, why not?
For the first time ever, Godzilla is now an Oscar winner, and so now in any future movie that they make, they could say starring Oscar winner Godzilla, and you
Well, he didn't make
the himself. He is the effect, so therefore.
I mean, the fact that I think the fact that they took a creature that we've seen for 70 years over like 30 something movies and gave us something scary, even scarier than that. Than we've seen before. Yeah. That alone is just a major accomplishment. So, congratulations to them. And then for our Out of Touch Dad segments, I found a word that I kind of like. It's called a hush trip.
A hush trip?
Hush trip. Do you have any idea what that might mean?
I do not. Let's see. If I had to guess, I don't know. I'm a dad. A hush trip sounds like when you get all the kids in the car and tell them to be quiet. We're going to go somewhere. Everyone else. Everyone, we're going to go get ice cream, but you got to be quiet till we get there. Listen, sometimes you got to do what you got to do.
Sarah, do you have a guess?
Is it when you like throw your baby in the back seat and drive around so that like you can like have them go to sleep?
We've done that.
You know, like.
Yeah, done that. But that's not what this is referencing, at least according to Urban Dictionary.
Oh, this is that kind of thing. No, I don't know.
All right. A hush trip is defined as a remote employee who works full time from an alternate location where they plan to enjoy leisurely activities in their off hours. And you don't feel the need to disclose a location.
That makes sense.
I have absolutely done that before. I have gone on vacation and just got my work done while I was there and not ever told anybody I was gone.
Yeah, but you're...
I am self-employed, but I also work for various companies. When I'm working for them, I can choose to tell them I'm gone if I want to, or I can just live my life and get my work done.
Just in case any future employers listen to this, I may or may not. I can either confirm or deny.
Hey, as long as your work's getting done, you're doing your job.
Yeah, exactly. Work is, you know. Okay. Dad advice. So, Sarah, as the president of the Scare Package Fan Club, do you have any advice on how to be a good Scare Package fan to your constituency?
Tag the hell out of them on Twitter. Like, show your support. Go watch it on Shudder. Rate it on Shudder. Go to Letterboxd. Rate it on Letterboxd. Now, if you didn't like it, don't rate it. No, I'm just kidding. I'm not that much of a letter bully. I'm only a little bit of a letter bully, as my husband calls it. I yell at him when he doesn't review things that we watch. I'll be like, where's your review? Why didn't you rate it? He'll be like, I didn't feel like it. I'm like, I'm so addicted to Letterboxd. It's so dumb. I won't, if it's not on Letterboxd, I won't watch it. Like, I've gotten to that point. If I can't log it, it's not, it's dead to me.
I have.
But yeah, no, I think like go, and this like also speaks to like all indie horror. Go support indie horror as much as you support, you know, big studio stuff. So keep supporting the studio stuff, because if you pay for the big ones, that money does go towards giving smaller horror a shot. But also support your indie, you know, horror movies. Support Shudder, support Screambox. Go watch those movies.
Yeah, and I think one lesson you can take away from both these movies that goes right along with what you were saying, celebrate the things you love, because these movies are celebrations of the horror genre.
Hell yeah.
They love it. It's obvious in every frame of these movies how much they love the genre. So, you know, celebrate that stuff, and then celebrate the directors and the movies. I have told everyone on the planet that I ever talked to about movies to go watch the Goo Man segment. Even if I can't get them to watch a whole movie, I'm like, at least watch that and then decide whether you want to watch the rest of the movie, because I love it. And so I want people to watch it. And, you know, just celebrate those things in your life. If it makes you happy.
Absolutely. And find filmmakers and support them, like the segment filmmakers, like that Anthony Cousins does stuff. Chris McEnroy does stuff. Like they all have other projects to go support too. Paper Street has, you know, a great
Paper
output.
Street in general is a great studio to just kind of follow along with and keep up with, because they're bringing new people out there. They're making low budget indie stuff, and you know, they're taking some real swings that the bigger studios can't. So they're making fun stuff.
Agreed.
All right. Well, that wraps up another episode. Sarah, thank you so much for joining us. Where can people find you?
I am on Spooky Sarah Says on every social media. Blue Sky, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok. I don't do TikTok, though. I look at TikTok. I occasionally will make one and then think, like, I'm so old, I look dumb doing this. Let's never do it again. And but yeah, I'm Spooky Sarah Says everywhere.
Awesome. All right, next week we will begin our reviews of Creepshow, the TV series, with episode 1, Grey Matter, and The House of the Head. Mm-hmm. So they do 2 segments, so you get double the review. This makes Jody's job even
I won't have to talk nearly as much as I've had to talk about these last 2 scare package movies. Both of them have so many things to say when it just comes to plot, so I'm just looking forward to only describing one thing next week. Maybe 2.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying with these segments. Yeah. All right. We appreciate everyone for listening. We would really appreciate if you would give us a rating review on iTunes, a rating on Spotify. Check out our YouTube for videos of these podcasts. And check us out on Dads from the Crypt Talk. And with that, we thank you for listening to Dads from the Crypt.
Follow Dads from the Crypt on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, or I will follow you to the grave. No, seriously, you really should watch, but be careful what you ask for. You may get it. Ha 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 ha.